on calling home, New Zealanders talk about their lives overseas. This week it is Owen Lindsay, the founder and artistic director of the Restless Ecstasy Theatre Company. Owen and his wife Anne-Marie, who's a singer, travel all over Europe with their work, but are currently based in Vienna. Owen Lindsay, good morning.
Well, good evening and good morning.
Yes, good evening and good morning. Because where are you right now?
I am in Dublin, in Ireland, sort of a temporary home away from home.
I knew that, actually, because your current show is the New Zealand play Skin Tight. Now, that has been received very well in Dublin. I was looking at a review in the Independent newspaper, and they were singing its praises and yours.
Yes, yes, it has been quite a surprise, actually, how well it's clicked with the audiences here. You know, we've had very good attendances, and all of the critical reaction has been very positive, so it's been a real joy.
And interestingly, it's a very New Zealand production, isn't it? But the Irish seem to have lapped it up.
The issues are all very human and very universal, I think. But, you know, the references to living in South Canterbury and, you know, the very specific cultural references, some of which I have to say did go over our local audience's head. We did have a few New Zealand expats come and see it, particularly early in the run. And they were the only people who laughed at some of the humor. But they've definitely responded to the human elements. And that's been great, because it's great to see that translate, you know. And I've had a couple of very, very fine actors, neither of which are from New Zealand, but who've really embraced the material and the challenges of reproducing a New Zealand accent, which I'm sure you know is not an easy feat. I mean, if Anthony Hopkins can't manage it, what hope is there for the rest of us?
That is a very good point. Regarding Anthony Hopkins and our accent, it is hard. We don't often think about that. Your home base, though, at the moment, is Vienna. Now, how did you come to decide to settle there?
It was almost an accident. We were living in Cardiff. We had lived in London for 6 years prior to that. And my wife and I, we met when I was living in Dublin. I moved back here in 2005. And we were kind of fed up with it, I have to say. The referendum on the European Union hadn't happened yet, but I think we could kind of smell something in the air. Something was about to change quite radically, and we weren't really interested in staying around for it. So we both have Irish citizenship, which allows us to live anywhere in the continent. So a job opportunity actually came up for me in Vienna, and I went over and applied for it, and they hired me on the spot. So it ended up being Vienna in the end, and we've been there ever since. So it's 2.5 years now.
Well, what is life like in Vienna?
Well, my wife is a classical musician herself. So Vienna is obviously a classical music city. It's a massive culture city in general. They have tremendous art and culture history. You know, they were the center of a massive European empire, massive multi-ethnic empire. It's a very diverse but also very classical culture. It's a very unique, quirky little country. And Vienna itself is sort of the center of all of that. You know, it was the historical capital of the empire and the seat of all of the major arts and culture institutions. It's just a very interesting place to be, especially having grown up in New Zealand, where, you know, culture is somewhat niche, you know, and very particular in its character. To be somewhere where it's been a center of it for so many years, so many centuries, in fact, it's a real experience.
Somewhat niche, yes, that's an artful kind of while remaining kind description. And you're right, we tend to forget the Austro-Hungarian Empire and how recent that was. All right, so that's why Vienna appeals to you. How are you with the language, both of you?
She's better than I am.
Okay.
But the thing about it is it's a very international city. There's an enormous UN mission there with a large number of American and British diplomats and so on working there. So the English language gets you through life pretty easily. My sort of schoolboy German didn't get me very far when we first arrived.
No, a lot of us know that feeling in Europe. Bridget Ann Gilbert in Berlin last week remarked that Berliners, you don't tend to have conversations with them in the corner dairy the way you might with a stranger in New Zealand. Is there that kind of initial reserve also in Vienna?
I would say Vienna's more laid back,
Yeah.
actually, than Berlin. Berlin is sort of a big, bustling mega city, and Vienna's more like a provincial capital. So it's nice in that way, actually. And people switch between the languages very casually, I find. So, again, that's a luxury for me.
So, what kind of work are you picking up as you move around Europe and do what you do?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to collaborate with a number of companies so far in mainland Europe and in the UK and Ireland. So I produce my own work through my own company, and I'm also on the board of another group in Vienna, and I've become sort of like an associate artist with a group in Prague, all working in the English language. But there is also a lively film industry in Budapest and in Prague, where they shoot a lot of American and British films for the historical locations and so on. So, as an actor and as a sort of a roving arts professional, it's a really interesting place to be.
When you're in Vienna, though, and I know from what you say that you probably aren't always in Vienna, what's your favourite sort of thing to do in town?
There is an interesting nightlife in Vienna. It's perhaps not as lively as some other parts. Here in Dublin, for instance, you can't walk 50 yards without finding a pub. But in Vienna, it's sort of like you have to seek out the interesting night spots. They're not all sort of centralized in one location. They're often spread out. There's so much culture. I mean, for someone like me, that's where I live. There's so much theater and opera and ballet and classical recitals and concerts. It's a place where you can just kind of just pick and choose what you want to see that night, but you will have to kind of seek it out.
And just to get a further sense of your day-to-day sort of life, you live where and how?
So we live in the center of town, and we are fortunate to be able to afford to do so, because Vienna is not a cheap city to live in. We, in fact, would not be able to live there had we not been very lucky a few years ago with some investments that we made. And they've paid off rather handsomely, so it allows us to be quite independent. So I am lucky now that my job, if you like, is the thing that I love, whereas I don't actually have to rely upon it entirely for my living. Because, as anyone will tell you, the arts is not a great living.
No.
It's something you embrace as a vocation, not a career, if you've any sense.
Which you obviously do.
I wouldn't want to say too much, but I've been lucky. I'll put it that way. I've been very lucky.
Okay. Anne Marie's the soprano as well. So to what extent is she working alongside, well, not necessarily alongside, but also with you?
Yes, I mean, she is also my partner in the theatre work. She is at the moment stage managing tonight's performance of Skin Tight, which will be coming down any moment now, I suspect. She obviously has her own projects, but when we're working on something together, then, depending on whether she's busy or not, she's sort of my right hand. She produces for me and keeps me from making too many silly decisions.
Is there, speaking of decisions, is there a New
Yes.
Zealand play, maybe even quite traditional, that you would long to put in front of a European audience, but maybe think, oh, I don't know if it would work? Because I guess you've thought about a few of them.
Oh, of course. I mean, I have a long, long-held desire to stage Tom Scott's The Daylight Atheist here in Dublin, if that were possible. I mean, the sort of traditional Kiwi plays are sort of Ladies' Night and Foreskins Lament and some of Bruce Mason's work, and it's all, for the Europeans, it's probably all a little bit quaint because their theatre is so avant-garde. Like they only do interpretation. You won't see a traditional interpretation of Shakespeare or Schiller or any of their classics. It can't really be done in the environment. It's kind of strange. So it has to be sort of radically rethought all the time. So for me to present a show about, a rugby club or something like that, it would be quite a challenge for us and for the audience, I suspect. Also because they don't understand the game of rugby at all.
That's
So
right.
but
The Irish do.
maybe it's something I should take on, really. Maybe it's something I should bring.
Now, have you followed the tumultuous political scene in Austria since you've been there? Do you have any interest in the politics, or even from an observer's point of view?
Yes, we have obviously followed it as a matter of necessity. And I mean, the government recently dissolved over massive allegations of corruption and so on. And I think the elections are next month to form a new bloc. But who's to say that the same political party won't be re-elected? So it's a strange time. I think the whole refugee crisis of 2015 really just terrified a lot of people, especially in these countries in Central Europe, where they haven't had a really strong or long-standing tradition of inward migration. Suddenly, there's these masses of people coming over the borders, and they're all very, very foreign, quote unquote, in their language and in their appearance and so on. And there are a lot of very traditional, very, shall we say, unworldly people in that part of the world who are just scared. A lot of that is media, and a lot of that is the sort of anti-Islamic propaganda that's been thrown around since about 2001, and people are taking refuge in these authoritarian right-wing parties, and it's obvious to anybody with even a modicum of objectivity that these people are crooks. Like, they're shysters and frauds. The heartening thing actually has been the massive pushback. So there are weekly protests in Vienna against the Freedom Party Austria, who were the hard right party that were sort of the junior coalition partner. And all sections of society were coming out for that. That was somewhat encouraging.
Even so, we think of Austria as a refined country, and yet the political ineptness has at times been surprising. There was that politician of the right who was caught in Ibiza with the supposed niece of a Russian
Yes.
oligarch offering public contract considerations in return for campaign funds. That was fairly eyebrow-raising.
Yes, it was. It's a bit like the Trump phenomena, you know what I mean? It's appealing to really deeply held prejudice and fear.
I know the world is in that interesting state of, I know my brain tells me one thing, but my gut tells me another, and that's the way I'm going to go. It's a baffling time. All right, I do need to ask you about another aspect of politics, and that is Brexit. And of course, so much riding on the Irish backstop. How do you feel? How do the people you meet in Dublin and Anne-Marie's contacts, how do they feel about the whole Brexit situation?
I think there's an exasperation generally. I have to say, most people here in Ireland kind of see it as just another entry in the long history of the Brits kind of, I don't want to use the language, but not being very kind or thoughtful towards the Irish in terms of their own behavior. The attitude on the continent is really just, what's your problem?
All right, I'll get away from politics and back to your own life. The obligatory questions, please. What do you miss most about New Zealand?
The sunshine and the people. I miss my immediate family, obviously. They still live there,
Of course.
and all of my old friends. And it's an awfully long way back. I get back maybe once every 3 years, so the distance, you feel it, and just the ease of things, really. Everything's kind of complicated where we live right now.
Complicated with what? Red tape and tax compliance and all those sorts of things.
Well, yeah. Vienna, especially, well, Austria especially, is a bureaucracy like you've never seen. It's one of the reasons everything there is good. Like, everything there is very, very regulated, and it means the standards are very high for everything. Like, I think the tap water in Austria is some of the cleanest in the world. So they get it right, but they kind of have a rigorous system for getting it right. The tax burden is not actually all that high, but you can see that it's actually being spent where it should be. It's visible, like.
Interesting you
So.
use that choice of phrase. It's one of the reasons that everything is good. And of course, it's one of the reasons the Brits have been bridling and half of them seething to leave for a long time. It's a curious dichotomy, isn't it?
I have a theory, if I'm honest, about the UK, that it's only a rich country on paper. The state itself is massively in debt and largely broke, and they don't actually have the money for everything that they seem to want everybody to think they have. Because tax avoidance and tax evasion is a sport, like, it's a national pastime. from what we've experienced ourselves, when we came into a little money, we realized what an industry there was in helping you to hide it. It's all based in London. So, you know, and London is performing that service for the world. But that doesn't mean that London has a lot of money in it. Do you know what I mean?
It's not the way Boris tells it.
No, it isn't. But nothing is the way Boris tells it if you look closely.
Congratulations on the successes you're having, Owen. And may they continue. I'm sure they will. Very good of you to talk with us.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure.
Owen Lindsay on Calling Home from Vienna.